p.m. and the second from 4 to 6 p.m. Each soup will be made with locally sourced ingredients, including vegetables harvested in the middle of winter on local farms. There will be plenty of vegetarian and vegan options among the selections, as well as chicken soups and fish soups made with locally sourced ingredients. And guests will receive a handcrafted ceramic bowl made by students in Mass Arts Clay for Change program. What should we play now? How about this? All right. So that, yes, and guests can take their bowls home after they're done using them to sample soups at the event. For more information about this event, which is Sunday at 1 to 3 or 4 to 6, there are two seatings of soupiness, visit haleyhouse.org or call 617-445-0900. Oh, we're so out of time. The views and opinions we've been expressing here on What's Left this evening have been those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT. Music for Human Beings will be coming up in what will appear to be a very long moment, but which, in fact, is just a burst of time. Thank you. Come back next week. Good night.
Ah, yes. Ah, marhaban. I'm a Dr. Jalis al-Sakran, and I welcome you. I'm very thirsty. Air is a little too warm. It is amazing how we adapt. Even to the warmth or to the freezing cold. It has been so cold that now I feel even this extraordinary coldness is warm. I am joined first by Zoro. Zoro, marhaban.
Thank you for having me, and thank you, of course, to all the listeners out there.
Zoro, we thank you also.
Yes, and as well, I thank you.
We are also joined by the Potion Master, Erno. Erno, marhaban.
Thank you, Doctor. My welcome extends to you like the warm breeze in the air today.
Well, it is so wonderful to have you both here. For those who are listening for the first time, it seems almost impossible, but the show, it is a participation, and like all participations, it involves us extending and disseminating our beliefs and our just discussions, but also we reach out and we wish to be reached out by. And in calling, you can reach out and to co-disseminate your beliefs.
Yes, it is a ripe night for communication, I think. Much can travel through this thick air.
It's true. It's like a syrup extending in all directions.
A very strange, sickening syrup. It is strange and confusing to me how disease travels through warm air yet not cold.
Yeah, disease. But does it really not travel through the cold air? Because also the victims become ill in the cold. It's common.
Yes, I think the problem is something like you have these virus. It transports in the cold, but it does not grow. And the weather warms up, and afterwards it grow inside of everyone, and then we all become sick.
And then while sick, we all know what happens. Nostrils get clogged. Voices become hoarse.
Yes, it is.
Appetites diminish.
It is quite interesting how much this mirrors the psychological effects. The cloudiness of the nostrils and of the mind.
It's possible, I think, gentlemen, that the effects may mirror the atmosphere of the earth, which was here before the brain was.
That makes sense, and of course the atmosphere, it permeates us, so it is in line that all will change at once.
Atmosphere, it's a strange image, like a journey when one imagines the arrow leaving the bow and striking the target. Similarly, the soul, one leaves the womb of one's mother and travels like an arrow to the grave. And the disease there may be like the sudden change of atmosphere, or indeed the arrow itself being struck by perhaps an animal and suddenly falling.
It could even be disrupted by the transient breeze, and that can be a disease.
I had an interesting image today. Along my travels, I noticed that there are many joggers, out, people who are running because of the warm weather, I assume. And I asked myself, what is it that these people are running from? And came to the conclusion that they must be running actually from their own mortality.
Or perhaps from a bear.
Both are possibilities.
Well, I mean this symbolically, of course. But
as is the bear.
But symbolic. It makes for a good visualization. A symbolic bear?
Yes, Zorro, yes.
Perhaps you care to elaborate?
Well, the bear can represent many things, just more than just mortality, more than just death. There are many things one can run from, one can hide from. And the bear, the proverbial bear that is chasing us through the woods.
I think I understand the pressures of a society, these things.
The stresses of life. I know many people who run to escape their troubles, who run to relieve the stress that the world has brought upon them.
Yes, of course, and I think in my own mind, and probably several other minds, the inner terror, this fear, this existential nausea, it takes the shape of a bear.
It could take many shapes, but I wonder, what are we running from? What are you running from, Zorro? What shape does it take?
Well, I wonder now, at the beginning I said that these people who are running, they are running from their own mortality. I'm wondering if perhaps this is merely a reflection of my own fears.
And what do they look like? If you had to put a shape on your fears, what represents them best? Is it an animal? A person? A thought, an idea.
It is bigger than a bread box.
Good. So we have a lower bound. What is it smaller than?
I think that perhaps it is more little than a dragon. I don't think that it is quite that large.
Well, I think we can all narrow it down from there and figure out what it really is. Mayan, I don't quite know. I said a bear as a general shape, but my fears could perhaps take on many others. Perhaps a tiger is more apt. I think yes, a tiger. It runs quicker, and I'm afraid I'm going to not just be overpowered by my fears, but they are going to catch up and attack me quicker than I can react. Sometimes I don't know if I'll make it out, if I will make it through this.
It almost makes me wonder if perhaps this abstraction cannot be captured by the manifestation of a material object. It's too much of an idealization.
yes, after that brief thought. I must say, no shape can really contain all of our fears. And or for that matter, all of our desires.
I'm not so sure. I think perhaps that most desires, they take the form of some kind of a bird. Perhaps this is a very good generic desire, I think.
Well, I would like to welcome someone who just walked into the studio taking the shape of both my fears and my desires. Peace Child Peter, welcome.
You're too kind, man. Thanks.
Peter, we were just discussing the shapes of various desires or fears that may run both before and behind us, causing us to run.
Yeah, I was actually, don't think of me as too juvenile now, but that somehow stirs up images of, sort of a phallic nature in my mind, because I suppose I was just on a plane, and they scare me, you know? You're inside of it with all these other people, and you're sort of running from something, but you're also running to something, and yet you're sitting still. It's like this great contradiction, you know? I don't know.
Absolutely. The contradiction, I think, is very much there. I myself, being very elderly, I have stopped running really for anything. I suppose this is a change in my own, the intensity of my feelings. Nothing really seems worth running toward or running away from.
Yeah, exactly, man. And like, I think the same thing, which is why the plane scares me, I think. Here I am running, sort of running away from one thing and toward another, and yet I somehow don't feel the need to do so, and yet here I am doing just that.
Yes, like a contradiction in life. There is something in one's brain alarms one, sort of a message. This is wrong. This is violating some basic principle of existence.
Yeah.
The idea for running or for being sent out of a cannon at a very high speed with a charge behind, saying, here I am flying towards Texas. And why?
Yeah, I think you said it well with this flying toward. You know, it's like you are being jettisoned away from one thing, but you can't help but think of all the awesomeness that you could be experiencing in the future, you know, because of where you're going to be. And at the same time you have that, you have this feeling of remorse almost, that you're leaving behind what you're leaving behind.
Sometimes I feel that I'm always running, always moving, trying to get to the next step, running from something, like, as I've mentioned, I don't know what, but I feel that I can't sit and enjoy the present. I feel I'm always trying to get somewhere. It may not be somewhere physically different, but I'm trying to get somewhere spiritually, intellectually, metaphorically.
Yes, in abstract
and
sense.
I'm doing it all very stupidly. I don't understand why I'm doing it.
Yeah,
I just run.
But if you take this pursuit and you wonder, why am I pursuing it, or why am I being pursued, this is only another pursuit in itself. And
yes,
it is the pursuit of meaning. So in a way, it is not very different.
So I wonder, why is it that we do what we do? I mean, why do human beings do anything? What What is the point of it all? Sometimes I really wonder this. We run and we run and we run. And we do so many things along the way. And like you mentioned, Zorro, these runners who are running from their own mortality, they're running from the Grim Reaper, but the Grim Reaper is in much better shape and on a bicycle, so what's the point?
Yeah, you could even say that the Grim Reaper is in the best shape because he's the one guy he's not going anywhere, you know.
And this, ironically, is what allows him to go so many places.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've been sitting in this plane for the past 12 hours. It's such a trying experience.
Well, I think we could potentially do with some outside opinions.
Perhaps reach to another plane.
If you would like to tell us where you're running, please call in. Number 617-253-8810.
Yeah, we look forward to having you come and complete our circle.
Yeah, I love this image of running, running, running. Why do people... Why is there running?
You know, man, I was just visiting my nephew, and he's a smart guy. He's into the physics, and he was talking about gravitation and stuff. I don't really understand it, but... You know, I feel like this question of why we run, it's like physics. It's like, why do we fall? It's this effect that the world has on us, you know? It's, why was I in the plane? Well, because I had to be in one place at one time and one place at another, and you know, here we are.
Well, I love this physics, and again, please strike us with your phone. Caller, marhaban.
Yeah, hey, how about that metaphysical thing over there in Egypt?
In Egypt.
Okay, I'm an Egyptian now. Hey.
So, yes, I think there is very exciting things in Egypt. Always, actually.
Yeah, the pyramids are there. Sphinx.
Pyramids are very exciting if you like things that don't do anything for long periods of time, except occasionally maybe people come and steal the marble off of them. But how about that book face revolution?
I think that one of the magnificent things about the pyramids is how unchanging they are, really, because even a mountain, if you imagine the mountain over a long, very long, or a shorter period of time, that it will crumble, or it will rumble and grow flatter.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what the caller is saying, right? The reason Egypt is so awesome is because you have these large things that, unlike mountains, they don't do anything, man. They don't crumble, they don't deteriorate, they're these solid pillars of permanence.
Yes, it is something of quite interest that these pyramids, they represent so much to us because they do so little.
Yeah.
Precisely. I always imagine the pyramid like a peg in the tent that is civilization. It's just nailing it down, really.
Ah, yes, yes. And this is always the last peg, which takes so much work.
Precisely. But there are...
I think that Donovan summed it up best when he said, first there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is
a mountain again. It's this change, man.
It's such a beautiful image. Why don't we take another caller? A caller one, stay with us. Again, if anyone would like to join, it's 617-253-8810. Caller two, marhaban.
Hi.
Welcome, caller.
Sorry, I'm just closing the door so I don't hear the radio in the other room. It can be confusing.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Thank you for that consideration. Our phone system, as the listeners probably know, is ancient and fragile.
Like the pyramids.
yet
yeah.
impermanent, unlike the pyramids.
I understand. A lot of things are ancient and fragile.
Ancient electronics are more mystical and conducive to metaphysical things.
Yeah, I think so. I do, now from my middle age, I remember the vacuum tube. And, you know, it was large, and if you went into the, as a programmer, you went and you maybe deposited a program or some simulation you were running, it was very, very clerical in feeling. You would present as perhaps a worshipper would submit to the high priest his sacrifice, you would submit a stack of cards on which you had made markings.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense with the theme of permanence, you know. It's like this resistance. The society has this new interesting technology and they don't want to change the way that things are done, so you still have to go to the priest and submit the ancient scrolls.
You know, I think this offers some insight into why people will run so hard from death, and how this is linked to our own motivations to grow and become an unmoving object.
Why don't we bring another caller on the air again? 617-253-8810. Caller 3, marhaban. Caller 3, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome, caller.
Thank you. Well, I'm just still, many weeks later, meditating over the sheer brilliance of your analysis of the relationship between the facial hair of a gentleman and his value as a being. And I wanted to ask you all a question, and maybe it's more of a paradox, that relates to the problems that I have with running.
Well, caller, may I ask first? I'm afraid I'm not familiar with this. I don't think I was on that show. I must have been gone. What was this paradox?
Well, it wasn't so much a paradox that you guys explained to the world, I think, in the most fabulous and poetic terms about the richness and the texture of man's facial hair and how this relates to the equations and calculus that we use in order to value that individual as a member of a society, as a lover, as an astronaut.
Oh, that's interesting.
That is quite interesting. I am wondering now, what is your question?
Right, my question, and I'll get to that, is about running. You see, I used to run away from my problems, and I would run away so fast and so long that because the Earth is circular, I would just come right back to my problem. And I dreamt of a flat Earth where I could run away from my problem and never come back to it. But then I broke my knee, and so I could not run any longer. I could only speed walk. And so my question to you is, if I'm just speed walking away from my problems on a circular Earth, will I come back to them?
I think it depends upon if you are turning, and if so, what directions you are facing.
Well, now, let's take an even slower analysis here. How do we define meeting the problem? Because is it enough that the center of your mass would not coincide with the problem? Or would it be that your entire body would, so if, in other words, if the problem were in your hand?
Or even in your sight.
Or perhaps it must envelop you entirely.
How far away do you need to be
from the problem to feel that it is a problem or not a problem?
To be comfortable, to be in the situation that you would like to be in.
Somewhere between a queen-size bed and a king-size bed distance away from the problem, and then I begin to feel comfortable with it.
So let us mathematically, analytically, we will assume that you live, for simplicity, forever.
Yeah, that makes
okay.
sense.
And that you will periodically in your life run into problems. There will never be a point at which you will no longer have any problems. Problems, they are part of this infinite life.
Because you live forever, yeah, that makes sense.
From what I understand, the faster you walk, the faster you get away from a given problem. But at the same time, the faster you run into your new problem.
Yes,
so, essentially, slowing your travel time down will just lengthen your life and lengthen the amount of time each problem takes and lengthen also the amount of relief you get in between each problem.
That's so brilliant. But I have to say that there is a difference not in speed but in character between running and speed walking. I don't know if you've ever seen me on the street speed walking in my Speedo, but I kind of waddle like a duck, whereas when I run, I'm more like a gazelle. So what does the duck say about problems versus the gazelle?
Well, caller, I love this distinction and the animal-like nature, but taking the broad view, I would just like to point out the Earth itself is a finite place, and your problems, like your life in this model, live forever. So eventually you will fill up the planet with your problems.
If you have not done so already.
And because they have a size which is larger than nothing, sooner or later you will have to face a problem.
This almost tells us that we need to sort of relax when we move. This is telling us, you know, the theme at the beginning of the show was running from problems. But really, maybe the lesson here is that the quicker you run from a problem, the quicker you run to a problem.
Yes, I think I agree. I agree, Peter, that the lesson is that we should not be the gazelle.
Yeah.
We should not be the gazelle. Instead, we should be like the duck. The duck is stationary and permanent. It's always in the pond.
Yeah.
It's always there. It doesn't...
It only moves when the problem is too big. And like, you know,
right. And the
south.
Problems, like the water droplets, bead off of its feathers. It washes... It lets the problems wash over him or her.
Or him.
Yes, I think that...
And the duck is always dry.
If it moves easily with the water.
If you remain stationary, you must be subject to all the problems which are pursuing you. But if you may face them all, then after that, you can encounter the problems one at a time and perhaps deal with them with the full force of your psyche.
What if you are traveling with a projector and you are projecting your problem at the speed of light as you travel on a spaceship as the speed of light? Will you then arrive at your problem in the future, or is it fair to say that we could use our digital projection technology to project our problems away from us into a time that we don't inhabit?
Caller, we are not physicians, but I would have to say you have to view things from the light's perspective, right? I don't know, but from the perspective of the problem, it's never really left you if you do that. You think you are projecting it forward, but really it's always with you.
And I love what you are saying here, Erno, and Erno as a wanderer and also a potions master, I think that... Erno has a lot to say about this subject, but I think there are definitely weaknesses in the simplified model that we have presented. But caller, are your problems durable? Can you really escape them if you return to a location that you have been? Are the problems that were once rooted in the earth there and have left the blood of their umbilical cords in that land, do they remain?
I think so, man. With that image that you just gave, how can you ever be rid of that?
I like to think of my problems as forms of of fecal matter that I drop into the soil of other people's lives and into other people's geographies, which at first my problems smell, and they might even render what I ate the night before, but eventually they become fertilizer, into which opportunity can grow flowers.
You know, and the common saying for that is, one man's trash is another man's treasure. We've heard that forever growing up, right?
Absolutely.
Maybe we should cause more problems.
But caller, it is important because I think it is somewhat short-sighted, if you will forgive me saying so, because realize the vast number of arthropods and bacterial workers who reduce the manure into a nutrition which is available for all the plant life. It requires energy and attention to extract value out of this this disorder, and it is this energy which I think that it cannot be avoided. It is, instead of like fecal matter, it is really like a knot in the web, in the net, which is the fabric which is connecting all of us together like that of a spider.
Yes, I agree. And on the perspective of this connection, I think that we cannot truly escape our problems, partially because every time that I run from my own problems, even if I manage to get away, I am always left with some regret that I have not fully dealt with them.
Perhaps the caller's analogy is the right analogy to take here. You take your problems and you bury them in the soil, and then they grow eventually into plants which feed animals, which become a meal, a nourishing experience for the soul.
I personally like to think of my problems as a companion. Like a pet dog or a friend, that maybe they sometimes annoy you because they need attention and, you know, they need to be fed and that sort of thing.
So this reminds me of a conversation I had with a good friend of mine's sister, actually. She was in California and she was saying she had this idea that maybe we live in heaven and maybe we live in hell, because you can't really have good sort of experiences without the bad ones to contrast them, right? And in the same way, you can't have bad experiences without the good ones to contrast them.
And she's probably right, because California is as bankrupt as hell is.
Or as heaven, right?
And neither hell nor California, nor heaven for that matter, can get their fiscal situation right these days. And when you think about a fiscal situation, you think about the monetary resources that are available for us to turn our problems into projects.
Ah, yes, yes. The point of view that we may capitalize upon the problem as an opportunity, as a challenge. I think that that is a good perspective to have, is to take the problem and to turn it into something that that can nourish.
I think we're all looking for an awakening. And whether it is that we eat other people's fecal matter in the soil a day after they've produced it as part of their problem, or whether we create projects that excrete problems which themselves excrete other people's problems, which themselves might have inside of them problems that people have with animals, such as the dogs and cats and the ducks and gazelles that we spoke of before. But the awakening, I think, is what I'm alluding to.
Yeah.
When the show began, not only were you talking about running away from problems, but someone touched on the subject of running to something. And that's actually what inspired me to call in, is because I've always felt that I was running to something as opposed to running away from something.
That is quite interesting. I am wondering, if you are running to something, does it also take the form of an animal in your imagination?
doesn't take like a physical form so much. It does like kind of have a light sort of thing going on, a sound sort of thing. So it's a sensory experience, and it's definitely there.
That is quite interesting. Do you associate it with the emotions of some sort, or...?
It's a longing emotion. It's an emotion of, you know, hope that a void will be filled.
I think I know this sensation some of my own, and thank you for helping me to recognize it. I will attempt to nourish it for myself.
Mm-hmm.
We run.
Maybe it's more like a computer server, and that the running isn't about mobility and creating distance, but the running is about trying to achieve 100% run time, meaning that there is never a moment when the system of problem seeking and problem aversion is down, and that we're trying to maximize our run time in a static system state.
That is quite an interesting reinterpretation of the word running, and I think it is suitable, especially in light of these ideas that our problems can be turned into opportunities.
Yes.
I'd really like to come to terms with having, for instance, an older computer with lots of viruses and that maybe didn't run so well all the time, but it was still your computer.
Oh, absolutely. And I think I, more than anyone else, really, I've seen these computers like young friends grow into very small annoying rodents around me, and it's quite astonishing because here gradually these old friends, these temples of learning, have grown unusual and ubiquitous.
You know, I feel like this computer analogy is pretty apt because there was a time, you know, I didn't have a computer and I was trying to sell my teas, and you know, no one was biting, and so I finally had to get a website up and get things started, and you could say that I was running from this problem of my lack of advertisement and getting out there, and well, so I put up a website, and what happens? I get all these viruses, and I get this slew of new problems. It seemed like the quicker I ran away from the one problem, the quicker I ran into the other.
The computers are really a very good analogy, because you take a computer. It was once, you know, a simple device built for a specific task, and we ran with it. We used it to fix all of our problems. We put all of our problems into this machine, and what happens? It becomes more dense, more complicated, more utterly inconceivable.
It's like balancing on one foot, you know? Suddenly all the weight is one place. You're relying too much on that one thing.
Absolutely.
It's more than that. It's running a marathon on one leg.
Yeah.
It is a potato sack race of bits. It is the problem with wireless computing, is that when we no longer have wires, we cannot pull the plug on this adventure.
That is very insightful.
Did you say insectual?
No,
insightful.
Insightful.
Oh.
Although I appreciate the interpretation.
These computers aren't really my specialty, but I find them to be very representative of problems. I never really understood them. It's strange. The doctor had mentioned vacuum tubes before, and I know they were part of the technology, but I don't see how. I remember people dancing with them in commercials, but it's lost on me.
It's so unusual. But I think the issue that I have with the running analogy is that, you know, we are leaving and we are depositing problems. But if we, for a moment, instead of taking the world-centric view, we take the life-centric view. So we are like the arrow again. And we regard each problem not as a sort of a landmine or a great mountain with teeth.
Or a bear.
Or a bear, indeed, or another animal.
Or a computer.
Precisely any of these objects, but
or
simply
a duck.
It is a sheet that we pass through, like the stone through the water or the arrow through the tissue, and we land at the target, and it is simply a stop on the road.
I think so. I think perhaps if I were to modify the metaphor just a little bit, it would be to say perhaps that we are swimming instead of running. And then you can encapsulate the way in which we are enveloped by our lives and by the things which we must encounter.
Yeah. I think that with most of the inhabitable Earth covered by water, we have been most ignorant to not defraud this previous analogy and talk about Finnick, because that's where we came from. Our problems came from the past, and if you go far enough into the past, you find our biological ancestors were not on land. They were in water, dreaming of yachts and South Beach and other things, but they were swimming.
Please call her.
Oh, well, sorry. I was empathizing with my desire to, rather than stand on feet and be subject to the full force of gravity, to lie inside of a viscosity and return to the womb in the way that I would return to my problems as they were inseminated in me based upon my cultural and genetic inheritance. But water itself has no barriers. There are no contours but for on the bottom of the floor of the ocean. The top of the ocean is flat. Sure, there are storms, but that's temporary. It always returns to a flat state.
So
we inhabit that.
That is quite interesting. I think perhaps not concise, but a very good idea. It may be disturbing if taken in a Freudian sense, but it is intriguing.
Well, my colleagues, I do have to say goodbye, and thank you for answering all of my questions
and leaving
me with many more weeks of enlightenment.
Caller, thank you so much, and I love this image again of the ocean, and I think we can talk about it next week, I hope. Or right now. Yeah, this image of the... and is the other caller still with us? Caller?
Yep.
Excellent. And again, if anyone else would like to call, the number is 617-253-8810. We just have a few minutes left. This image of the ocean, I know that it is the popular belief that we all came from the ocean, but I would like to present an alternative theory, which is, consider our eyes. We blink. Do we not blink?
I blink.
We all blink.
We blink.
We blink. And the reason we blink, and we have developed blinking because we developed the eye on the land. It is possible. And therefore, one creature who was unable to blink, perhaps returned, they deposited themselves in the ocean to prevent themselves from blinking.
Or because their eyes were dry and they just, you know, they couldn't blink, so...
It sounds entirely reasonable.
So it is another hypothesis. Because I actually believe that if one were a stone in the water seeking the quickest path to the bottom, it would come naturally. But it does not come naturally to the fish. because the fish did not come from the stone, it came from us, from a common ancestor of ours.
So which creature is it that has returned to the water?
Yeah, it is a belief, a possibility that it is not a return to the water, but in fact...
A journey to the water.
Yeah, a journey into the
land.
Oh, I see.
He ran, or she ran from their problem, the problem of dry eyes without being able to blink, and into the water and found a solution. Maybe that is the answer. We don't just run from our problems. We run from them to the solutions. We yes. must remember that.
I think that it is always the case when we have dry eyes to use a solution.
Yeah, see, the thing is that one cannot simply run because there are problems living in the sea, just as many, just they're different problems than the ones from living on land. The thirst is gone because water is available, but breathing becomes a difficulty that must be faced.
Flying becomes impossible as well.
Although in a way, the flying becomes simple because...
You're always flying in the water,
precisely.
Right? Yeah.
It is falling that it becomes somewhat challenging.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, right? In our language, we have this distinction, but like when you think about it, the air is just like the water. The difference is that the water is thicker and it's harder to float in the air, and it's easier to sink in the air. That's really the difference, man.
We work and run from one problem right into another. Maybe that is life. Life is the set of challenges that we must face, and if we run from them, we really run from life.
Yeah, so it's like we gotta face them. Gotta face our problems.
This comes back to why I said earlier that I would like to think of problems as a companion rather than...
Yes, I remember the dog. It was a terrier or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a Boston Terrier.
Yeah, I love that image too, because in many ways our existences are determined simply by our problems. Why don't we bring a final caller on the air again for next time? The number is 617-253-8810. Caller 18, marhaban.
Yeah, hi. It's Scott from Cambridge.
Scott, welcome.
Hello, Scott.
Welcome. I'm trying to turn my laptop off. Real quickly, do you happen to have any copyright reservations on the program itself?
Copyright reservations.
Sure.
Well,
if I can just toss that to see where it might happen to fly.
I'm not really sure about copyright, but you know, let me be as free as I can be, because I don't have a lawyer. I would think that I would love for the program and for the things that we learn to belong to humanity. So, you know, if...
You're advising me to use it within an intellectual context, if at all, because of your wishes.
Yeah, I would love for any derived things, any resulting production to return to the public domain.
Okay. That's cool. I'm a very, very, very amateur poet.
Oh, please, if you have poetry, we would love to hear it.
Okay. Well, maybe some visual poetry added to your program itself.
It would be challenging, but I think we would all enjoy it.
Okay. Thank you. Please have a nice weekend.
Thank you, Scott.
Okay.
It's such a beautiful idea, but because the program is so, there is really only the audio and the spiritual aspect.
Yes, it can be difficult. Yes, I'm very, very sorry sometimes in this respect that we cannot broadcast in all forms. I think that these ideas, the technology, the smell of vision, it has potential.
Absolutely, and you know, again, I think really if a person has sufficient imagination, sufficient psychic presence, sufficiently vivid alternate imaginations, then they can really enjoy it in a very spiritually expansive way.
I think that one thing that I would invite our listeners to do, if they possibly can, is to light some incense if they would like to join us in the meditations which we have. It makes the atmosphere more comfortable.
Yeah.
I must bid you farewell right now.
Well, caller, thank you so much for joining us and for listening and for speaking.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, caller. Yeah, the image and the smell of the incense, sandalwood, or other flavors of incense, indeed. I think these are excellent things.
Soothing.
Mm. Absolutely. I imagine the pepper, the unusual, but a way to add flavor.
Yes, and I think it it contributes to this image we have of enveloping to become as in the womb again. Because the experience of a smell is a sort of omnipresent.
Yeah, it seems to just be, right?
I really feel like we solved a problem today. The problem of problems. And this is another problem.
Indeed, time always is a problem for anything but impairment. But, I think also that progress has been made here. So yes. I would like to thank our listeners and the many callers that we had that we could not get to, unfortunately. And thanks to Erno.
Thank you, Doctor.
Erno, the Wanderer and Potion Master, Zorro.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you to all the callers we did get to as well. And thank you to the listeners.
And thanks to Beastchild Peter.
Well, I've always got to thank the good Doctor.
Thank you, Peter, and I do enjoy those teas. This is a Dr. Janis Sakran here on Music for Human, which is New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you, here on Music on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM every Friday at 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Radio Ninja. Maestrana.
Safety. number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians and unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
From outer space to save the human race. A creature with a dream to entertain the children of the night. The rest, as they say, became history.
Magogo. The Show Show. Saturdays, 8 p.m. WMBR, 88.1 FM, Cambridge.